and welcome to today's Raging Bull podcast. We occasionally like to add guest interviews from traders and experts from Raging Bull's Elite Traders Chat Room. In the Raging Bull Elite Chat Room, we hold live trading sessions with Raging Bull's traders, elite members, and our invited guests. These sessions are hosted by our Elite Chat Room host, Hitha Herzog. It's my pleasure now to introduce Hitha and one of our special guests to the Raging Bull podcast.
Good afternoon, Elite Room. It's your host, Hitha Herzog, and I have my good friend, Rob Goldstone. Rob, thank you so much for being here with us.
Pleasure. I'm so excited for this interview.
So I want to give you a little bit of a background on Rob. I mean, I've known him for 20 years. He's a dear friend of mine, but let me get to it. I'm just going to read some of the accolades that Rob has been involved in. Obviously, he's an author, but we also, in the last three decades, Rob is a music industry stalwart. He is an expert in this industry. He was one of the first journalists, or one of the only journalists, to go on tour with Michael Jackson during his Bad Australia tour. We're talking about the album Bad, not that it was a bad tour, but Michael Jackson's Bad. And he also worked in the music industry as a manager and publicist. As you know, his clients also included EMI Music Publishing, Virgin Megastore, Steinway, and he spent 10 years as the head of international marketing for HMV Music. Rob, did I get everything? I think there's even more stuff that you've been involved in.
I think that's quite enough.
Okay. So, Rob, as you know, Warner Music Group just went public. Looking at the stock right now, it is now up about 20%, trading at $2.38 or so a share. What's interesting is that it debuted yesterday. However, it was supposed to debut on Tuesday. And part of the reason why they didn't debut is because of Black Lives Matter. What is the significance of that, especially for a label like Warner?
I think it's hugely significant. I mean, obviously, nobody could ever time something like this, nor would they want to. But initially, it got delayed because of the COVID crisis and the pandemic, which we should all remember we are still in, even though it seems like it's gone away. It hasn't. But in terms of Black Tuesday, as it was called, Warner's very sensibly, in my opinion, decided to delay their offering to pay respect to what was going on. And when you think that this is the label who historically has had groundbreaking landmark artists like Aretha Franklin and Quincy Jones and Prince, and even bands like the Ramones and Fleetwood Mac that have had a really serious message. And then let's not forget a little artist called Madonna, who spent most of her career at Sire, which was one of the us. And she was never backwards at coming forward in making a statement on what she believed. So I think it really made sense that they would delay this. And I think they probably got a lot of kudos for that.
So do you think then, you know, we met 20 years ago at a time when music was changing so rapidly. At the time, music was moving on the digital platform. We were all kind of exploring it. Then we saw a breaking point in 2007, 2008. It seemed as though just the whole label format was breaking down. And when we think about Warner, it had gone public. It then went private. And then, as we know, it's going public again. Where do you think the music industry is going now? Are we seeing a renaissance of what the music label is all about? You know, again, music labels in my mind evoke this sort of pre-2008 and now we're post-2008. What do you think the music industry and music labels are going to look like?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. And there's no question that the music business as it was when we first met 20 years ago, which seems like 100 years ago now, is very different. But what I do think is interesting is if you ask anybody who probably is 25 and under, and you talk about albums being released and things like that, they have no idea what you're even talking about. So the whole landscape is so different, but there's still a bigger desire for music than ever before. The crafty thing and the clever thing is how labels play into that. And we saw that, you know, Warner's were one of the last major labels to actually close their deal with things like Spotify. And they wanted to be sure that their artists were being compensated and that there wasn't, remember the era of free music, everything was going to be free. Mm-hmm. But really, you and I are doing a conversation via Zoom. Well, we could just as easily be presenting our new album via Zoom. And so if you think over the years, there's so many artists from Justin Bieber to Stormzy in the UK who've been discovered online or who've done their music initially online. But what's interesting is they all end up with a label. So no matter how they do it themselves and how successful they are, they all, Arctic Monkeys is another great example. They did everything on their own until they needed a label. So I think music labels will always be there. It will always have a need, but that need changes. And at the moment, it's about, you know, I've had artists that I've looked after and we've tried to do stuff ourselves, but then you want to do stuff internationally. You want to make sure you're getting paid. You want to make sure you're getting distribution. It all leads back to a label in the end. They just have to. And I think, you know, by doing this IPO, it gives them a big chunk of change suddenly. And I think that investment hopefully will go towards the future, what it is they need to do to make their artists as successful, if not more successful, going forward. And a whole slew of new artists who don't care about records and DVDs and CDs because they're not from that world.
You bring up a really interesting point. When we look at companies, especially, you know, I cover retail, I always look at the capital expenditure or CapEx that these companies are putting back into themselves, into you know, development, research. In this sense, you're saying that the capital expenditure is going to go potentially back into the label to explore more types of revenue generating instruments for the label.
For digital platforms, for digital publishing. And the newest one I hear thrown around all the time is AI, is artificial intelligence. What that's going to mean for the music industry. Are we going to be in a world where robotic music exists? Well, suddenly you don't need songwriters who get paid and you don't need artists. I understand a lot of these companies are in the same way as they wanted to investigate what Napster meant and what Spotify meant and what Apple Music would mean. There's a whole new thing around the corner. You know, maybe we'll get songs written by non-humans in the future and performed by non-humans. Well, what does that mean in terms of revenue? There's all of these new things that are just around the corner. And I think it'll be interesting to see what they do with that capital, that injection of capital. But you would hope it would go back. It is worth pointing out also that the majority stakeholder in Warner Music Group, Len Blavatnik and his company, I noticed that his family foundation committed $100 million either last night or this morning that's going to go into what now is all under the umbrella of making a difference under the Black Lives Matter umbrella and artists of color. And hopefully that does something that will help in diversity and will help in promoting. But, you know, that was a very significant initial reaction from that.
I mean, it is certainly a significant amount of money. What is also interesting, I will point out, and what we should talk about is that the board of directors of Warner Music Group does not have a single person of color. So if they are, I mean, $100 million of investment into Black Lives Matter is certainly, like I said, significant and great. But let's talk about the executive board. I mean, what are executive boards going to look like now as we start moving forward? And tell us, I mean, you've worked with Len before. What is he like as a manager? Because this, you know, when you're looking at a company to invest in, especially trade, you always look at the executives. And since his name is the first on the masthead, tell us about your experiences with him.
Well, I think even before doing that, it's worth remembering that this is a company not only with a great name, because it, of course, was formed over 60 years ago as an arm to the whole Warner Brothers empire of movies, but it's had some of the greatest names as record executives, legendary, iconic names, starting with Ahmet Ertegun, that legendary. And going through Jerry Wexler and Mo Austin and Seymour Stein, who discovered Madonna, and David Geffen, who everybody is a household name, and Doug Morris and Irving Azoff. So these names, I think that's part of the provenance of what you get when you buy into something like Warner Music Group. Len Blavatnik, I know a little bit. Now, it's interesting. I like to use the word a little bit. And I just want to share an anecdote that when, as you mentioned, I did work with Michael Jackson very closely. And when he died, I was approached to do some interviews on TV. And I said, you know, I was only close to him for about 10 days. I didn't really know him. I said, I knew him a little bit. And they said to me, people write books who've met somebody never. So a little bit is all very relative. So I'm just going to paraphrase that by
a little bit.
I was managing an artist who was based, in fact, out of Moscow. And I met Len in Moscow at the equivalent of the Grammys. And I'd never met him before. And he was really charming and he was really nice. And I think he was quite short. I like people who are quite short because I'm quite short. And I don't mean short in temper, I mean short in stature. And I just remember that when we talked about how excited we were that I had just got my artist signed to ADA, which is a distribution arm of Warner Music Group, he said, can you please take my information, take my number, and just keep me appraised if there's anything you ever need, if something's not going your way. I really want to take a hands-on approach, and I'm really interested in the music side of everything. And I thought it was really interesting that he took that effort. He didn't have to say that. And people would say, well, of course he said that, because you know, I've met lots of executives. They don't all say that. So I thought in that respect, and then I met him at the Grammys the following year. And again, he said to me, how is your artist doing? How are we doing? That's what was most significant. I met him, I think, three times in all, in a very short period of time. And each time, straight after he asked me how my artists are doing, he asked how they were doing in relation to their handling of it. And he was really interested in, don't forget, you have my email, you have my contact, if there's ever anything that's not right. And that is a bit of a hands-on. You know, it's not a, oh, I have this big multi-billion dollar empire I don't care about. I got the impression he did care about it.
So he's obviously a hands-on executive. You are talking about a very specific artist who was in, I mean, Emin, right? He was based in Moscow, correct? And talk about what it is like when you have an artist, an international artist, and you're trying to get distribution here in the United States and the distribution arm of, you know, that aspect of it, because I think this is important, mostly because Warner Music Group, this is a big, this is one arm of Warner that I think is going to be an extremely lucrative arm, a revenue generating arm, especially when people are looking at investing in this company, creating this company.
It's also a lucrative revenue arm because you don't have to be signed to a Warner label in order to be distributed by Warner or one of its affiliates, which, as I say, it goes through, it's the company called ADA and its boss is a really great guy called Elias Seton. So I had an artist who was signed to their own label and we needed a distribution deal and you need the best to distribute your product internationally. And Warner's affiliated distribution companies were the best, in my opinion, anyway. And you know, there are so many aspects of it. When I worked for EMI Music Publishing, they also have a legendary, or had a legendary head in a guy called Marty Bandier. And he once said to me, for instance, in the publishing business, he said, I want to tell you something, the publishing business is like a cake or a loaf of bread. It's not made up of one big thing. It's made up of crumbs. But if you have enough of those crumbs, it's a very successful cake or a very nice bread. And so what Warner Music Group has, it has Warner Chappell Music Publishing, which is very, very successful. It obviously has not just Warner's records, but it has all of its labels, Elektra, Atlantic, and a host of others. It has their distribution arm. And so if you put all that together, what you're really investing in is multiple channels. As digital music publishing becomes huge, you're benefiting from that. Even down to make it in its simplest terms, when you watch The Voice, when you watch American Idol, when you see those contestants singing those songs, whoever it is that publishes those songs are being paid. That's the simplest way. When you're watching, I remember, again, Marty Bandita, I mean, one of the most successful pieces of music they'd ever licensed was, and now I have to sing on your show, was do, 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 do. And it was a thing for either a gum or it was for some chewing gum or it was for Tums. I think it was Tum, to Tum, Tum.
Yeah.
They licensed those notes as part of something. Well, if you imagine how much that's played, you get paid for that. So it's, there was a band whose name escaped me completely out of Canada. No one cared then, nor will care again about the name of the band. But they wrote the music that when Vonage launched into the United States, they chose that music. Well, it was unbelievable how much this band made from that. You know, you want nothing more than to have your music licensed by Ford or Toyota or whoever, because that's your money. What people often don't realize is if you're a great performer, you're going to make your money touring and on merchandise, but you're not going to make any money by singing on a CD.
Right.
Who is going to make the money are the people, which could be you if you wrote it, who wrote those songs. So the publishing arm of Warner's, Warner Chappell, takes care of that. And that's huge revenue source in today's world when everything is digital and online and all the music in games, EA Sports were huge in providing revenue because they licensed music. And so the issue maybe 10 years ago was, will they be able to collect on all these digital rights? Well, the answer is yes now. So it's a huge industry and only getting bigger.
So Rob, you wrote a book. And I will be remiss if I don't talk about your book a little bit. Speaking of distribution and getting artists, you know, with, you know, as maximum exposure as possible, you wrote a book. When your artist came, you know, you wanted to get your artist here with, you know, some exposure here in the United States. Talk about the process of getting your artist here in the United States. Now, I know the subject of your book, you know, is political. Here in the room, we don't really talk about politics. We try to keep it to trading. But when you see the, you know, the future of maybe getting artists internationally into the United States, and when your artist gets involved in a political slash global, I don't want to call it a scandal, but when it becomes a
crisis.
What was the word you used?
Used crisis.
Crisis. Okay. When it becomes a crisis, you're talking about Len Blavatnik, who said that if there was ever an issue, you know, give him a call. Or, you know, I know that Emin was distributed through a Warner arm. At what point did you say, you know what, I need to get the executives involved? When it escalates to that point, from your perspective, give us a little insight as to how you handled that from the artist side, because you were managing him at the time.
I was. So just to give, 30 seconds of background, I'd managed an artist for about 4 years who was based in Russia, but sang in English and was looking for an international career. His name was Emin. His full name was Emin Agalarov. And as part of it, I was doing anything and everything to get him noticed, including signing him to Warner Distribution. And what you're referring to and why I wrote a book is because as part of that, we performed at, and actually Emin's company hosted a Miss Universe contest in Moscow. And the co-owner of that contest was none other than Donald Trump. And as has been well documented, in that time we spent with him, we all became friendly. Not friends. I wasn't his adoptive son and everything else that's been said, but we became friendly enough. And on a visit, I just should throw this in, on one visit Emin paid to the States after that, we went to Trump Tower to visit Donald Trump. This was way before he decided to run for anything. And we walked in and there was rap music playing. And Trump was holding up, and this is in my book, I mean, Trump was holding up a platinum disc. And he said to me, you're in the music business. Like, what do you think of this? And I looked and I was like, what is that? And what are you playing? And he said, it's a song. They've written a song about me and it's had 94 million views. That's unbelievable. And I said, have you listened to the words of this song and what it says about you? And I'll never forget. He said to me, I don't care what it says about me. It has 94 million views. And so that, first of all, speaks to the thinking of our current president. But secondly, as this transitioned on, we ended up in the center of somewhat of a scandal. Your word was right, because Emin's father had made a request, as many people know, for a meeting at Trump Tower, the now famous, infamous meeting at Trump Tower. Mm-hmm. As his publicist, I was the one who made that request. And from that, I became what I always never imagined could happen. I became a story instead of a publicist and a manager. But there was a moment I was on Capitol Hill testifying, which is another phrase I never thought I would ever use in my life. And I was trying to tell the congressman in the room about what it takes to break an artist and what it takes to actually do anything you can. And I said, you know you all think that we had this close relationship with Donald Trump and all of that, but you know, Emin had a song called Woman. And when Hillary Clinton received the nomination from the Democratic Party, we suggested to him that he used that song and we set it to some video of hers and her campaign image. And he loved the idea and we did it. Now, these congressmen could not, and it's in public testimony, it makes really interesting reading, they couldn't grasp why we would support Hillary when they thought we supported Trump. And what I spent some time trying to explain is, when you work in the music business, and this is your music client, you don't support either of those people. You're supporting your client, and you're looking at opportunities to expose your client to as many people as possible.
Right.
So if they have a song called Woman, and there is a woman running for president at the time your song is out, to me, it's obvious you would try, and we wanted to try and get that adopted as her kind of campaign thing. It didn't matter about the politics. And it was interesting. One particular congressman said to me, I am still confused. And I used a phrase, which isn't mine, but it's some famous English comedian made it up. And I said, I understand you're confused, but believe me, you are better informed. And it's like, what else can I say? It's the music business. It's not normal. We don't do things in a normal way. And I think that's why people are excited to invest in something like Warner Music Group, because you're able to say, I'm in showbiz, I'm in entertainment, I'm in the music biz. And I may add, and I should add here, I haven't invested in, so it's not like I have any vested interest in this.
Yeah, of course, you should probably just say that too. Yeah, yeah.
But right. I'm just saying, I think for some people, it's a sexy thing. If you've got teenage kids and they go, oh, we hate your investment. Guess what? I invest in the label of Lizzo. I invest in the label of Ed Sheeran. That's something. It's sexy. It's something interesting. So I think that speaks a lot to it as well.
I'm going to open it up to questions. Rob, I have, I'm going to ask you a really quick question, which I never think I ever asked you. What was the aftermath of it? What did you, how did you, as a manager and publicist of Emin, what ended up happening afterwards? How do you, as someone in the music industry and as part of a label, did this help the distribution of his music, or did it inevitably hurt it? And
Emin, being Emin, who was a very who grew up in the States, had very much a U.S. type of logical sensibility and loved Elvis and all of that. So he, a lot of people, when they think about this Russian performer, think, well, he probably can't even speak English. He grew up in Tenafly, New Jersey, and all that. So it's, he decided to do something that's very him. And he brought out a record called Got You Good. And he made a parody of the whole thing. And he hired lookalikes. Actually, I wasn't working with him at the time, but really amazing lookalikes. And he brought out a video that said, have you all gone insane, basically? Yeah. This was about a music project. And, to him, who's thousands of miles away and in a bit of a bubble, it was very hard to understand why something which was a request from some relationship that had been formed over music and entertainment and Miss Universe would have exploded. Obviously, if you live here, it's easier to understand why. So it was very difficult. And in terms, if you're asking me, very difficult to work, because I was branded wrongly as somebody who had gone out of their way to help get Donald Trump elected. I did make the point that I'd never voted for anyone, let alone Donald Trump, mm-hmm. and hadn't supported him in any way. But I think we're a very black and white society. There's no gray anymore. So you can no longer have debate, in my opinion, or arguments over something like this, over politics. It's I'm this, you're that, there's nothing in the middle. And so it was very difficult, very, very difficult to talk about music when the media would say to me, I don't want to talk about your artist. I want to talk about you. So it's very hard. But you know what? I'm here and I'm talking to you. So
that's and you're within it. You know, you're certainly, you're back to where your roots are. Like I said, everyone, I met Rob 20 years ago at when I was working for a digital rights management company. And we've obviously stayed friends all of this time, and I love him so much and love you dearly. Rob, we are so grateful that you came in to talk to us today and about this Warner IPO. I hope that you will come back when they start reporting out earnings, and maybe we can have Marty Bandier in here. We can have a three-way conversation about
that would be
the future of music and where this label that just went public again for the second time in its history is going to go. Thank you, Rob Goldstone.
Thank you, Heather.
Well, that's a wrap for this episode. Thanks for listening. I invite you to visit RagingBull.com/podcast. That's RagingBull.com/podcast. To discover more episodes, to learn more about people who have created, built, and lived successful lives. Also, remember to subscribe to one of Raging Bull's newsletters. Join me on the next episode as we share more stories from our guests on the wisdom behind wealth and how they built their own success. Raging Bull Podcast is brought to you by RagingBull.com, helping traders succeed through education, resources, and where you can watch real traders make trades. Raging Bull, learn to trade. We'll show you how.